You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Did you know that the most important human invention was gynecology? Not fire, not stone tools, not the wheel, not penicillin, gynecology. What about the fact that humans are not the only species to have abortions? Or that female bodies are probably what led the way to bipedalism? This is just some of what you'll learn when you read Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Human Evolution by Kat Bohannon. For the last 2,000 years, the story of humanity has been written mostly by men about men. What's more, for over a century, the female body has been drastically left out of biological and medical research. That's slowly starting to change, and what we're learning about the biology of sex differences is rewriting the story of humanity and the story of our bodies, what they really are, how they really work, and where they really come from. Even though we're just starting to scratch the surface of that story, the story itself is 200 million years old. Eve is that story. This book is so fascinating. It's also engaging, easy to follow, and often hilarious. So it's no surprise that it was an instant New York Times bestseller and that it's been longlisted for the Women's Prize for Nonfiction. We also love that Eve is inclusive of trans identities, which is sadly still not the norm for these types of books. So if you've ever wondered why women outlive men or whether or not we evolved to be sexist, you're going to want to check out Eve by Kat Bohannon. Thank you so much for sponsoring this episode. Hey everyone, welcome back. My name is Renee. Pronouns are she, her, hers. And I've got our executive director, Sally, with us. Hi, Sally.
Hi, my pronouns are also she, her, hers.
So we have been in the midst of handing over the reins of Feminist Book Club. If you're new here, I founded Feminist Book Club in 2018, and we are in the process of restructuring as a worker-owned co-op. And I am stepping down as the kind of lead executive director position. And Sally has taken over. So for the last couple of months, Sally and I have been working closely together to basically train on all of the day-to-day operations of Feminist Book Club, because there's a lot. There's a lot that happens. And Sally, you've been so gung-ho and like willing to go there with me, so I appreciate that.
It's been, you know, I was gonna say a pleasure, and I guess in some ways it has been, but it's just been like, okay, I guess I'm on this ride.
It really is a roller coaster. But you know, you're an entrepreneur at heart, so
Oh, yeah, for sure.
this isn't your first entrepreneurial rodeo.
No, it's not. It's just like a funny, you know, and every business has its quirks, which I know well because I support business owners, but it's just like a funny thing. But it's also been great because like I love Feminist Book Club. I love this space. I love the product. I love the community. I love the mission. Like I just love all of the things. So it's been great to like really dig in there and see what's going on. It is a lot.
It is a lot. And so much of it has been all up in my head for the last 6 years. And so getting it out of my head and kind of into a Google Drive or into your head has that the knowledge transfer has been, has had its ups and downs. We're recording this podcast because we ran into a really interesting issue that I didn't realize was such an issue until I was sharing it with you. And that is the trials and tribulations of selecting our books of the month. So do you want to kind of explain the process of how books of the month are selected for Feminist Book Club?
Okay, so we announce a theme that's coming up. Our members submit their picks for that theme. So, for instance, folklore. we had the little question box and everybody could submit their suggestions. Then we internally go through those. We come up with a list of them that we're gonna have for the book poll. Then we launch that, and then members get to choose from, I don't know, like 10 to 15, if we can make it to 10. 10 to 15 book options for fiction, 10 to 15 book options for nonfiction that go with the theme. Then members vote. We've got, a top two or three usually, and then we pick the books from there.
Right. So it really is member driven in terms of, our team does select the theme, but the members are the ones that come up with the content for what we end up choosing. And it all has to happen fairly quickly, too, because we do this like a month in advance every month. Which, looking back, I wanted to make it the reason why we do this is because I wanted to make it really a democratic process. Like, I'm very into non-hierarchical structures. And I thought, this is one way that we can kind of bring the community into the decision making. And it has its challenges. And one of those is time. The other one is availability. What are some of the surprises that you have found when it comes to narrowing down? Here's what we end up with is like 50 or 60 or 80 book suggestions that we then have to narrow down to that like 10 to 15 you're talking about. And what are some of the surprises that you have
Well,
encountered?
first of all, I'll say sometimes it's not even enough suggestions, or either because there's so many of the same, so like maybe half of the suggestions were the same one book. So we don't actually even have 10 options because so many of them were for the same option. But then the other thing was like, I personally, I'm going to use the folklore one as the example because it's the one that I did from start to finish. It was all me. So like I can speak with confidence. There were a couple of books that like I was excited to have as options that I was like, this, oh my God, that would be so fun if we ended up choosing this book. Like it's been on my TBR for a while. It'll be so great to read it in community. There are 17 copies of this book in the entire nation of the United States. That's not enough for this book club. We have significantly more than 17 members, so even if only a fraction wanted to read this book with me, it wouldn't be enough.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure there are independent bookstores around the country that have more copies, but when we are ordering our books, we are ordering wholesale, either from the publisher themselves or from a third-party distributor, and they're called Ingram. They're like an aggregator for all publishers. So, indie publishers you can get through Ingram, but a lot of times, like you said, if it's an older book or if it's a like a university press will often only have like 15 copies available for us to order at wholesale prices. Yeah, it sucks.
Really, the way that my hopes and dreams came crashing down, I was like, oh, I guess we're not, I'm not reading any of these books, not through this. I mean, I might still read them on my own, but not because
Yeah.
we're going to select them as the book of the month.
I remember distinctly encountering this during our month that we featured the theme witches, because here's what was the issue is nonfiction books about witches exist in copious amounts, but so many of them are written by men. So when we select these topics, we don't do a whole lot of pre-research on like what is even available to be suggested. I was so surprised that so many books about witches are written by men. And like, I don't know what that says about the world, but I don't like it. Same thing goes for women in art nonfiction, which was a recent, is our April theme. There just aren't very many, unless it's like a biography of Georgia O'Keeffe or Frida Kahlo. Like those exist, often are written by men or are written by like museum presses or again, university presses. And in those cases, they are so expensive.
Yeah, because that was the other issue. I was also surprised by that. Not surprised that books are expensive. I mean, we know that. But I guess just like you know, sometimes maybe the most popular thing that was suggested. So like with the folklore, I think it was The Fox Wife. It's a new release, available in hardcover. It was like $28 a book or something. You know, our membership is only $35 a month, you know. So it's, you know, it's a it's these are the things that you need to consider when you're trying to select the book. You like we want to make sure that we're not being irresponsible and just like picking something just for the sake of picking it, I guess. Even though the book might be great. It might be a great book. And maybe people would have had a great time reading it, and maybe we'll circle back when it's available in paperback.
And that's not to say that we won't choose a hardcover, because sometimes, you know, we can make things work. We can adjust our overhead in other ways for other months, but we also have experienced really tight financial months when we pick hardcover books. So if you're a member and you're listening, like, don't be afraid to suggest hardcover books. There are some months where we can make it work, but then there are other months where it's just like, I'm sorry, like, oh, we may snag, you know, 6 or 8 copies if you want to swap out. But yeah, oh, books are so expensive. And we don't realize that books are expensive because we have been so trained to purchase on Amazon. And I'm gonna drag Amazon right now. They are horrible for a number of reasons, but they are particularly ruining the book industry, single-handedly, I'd say. Because if you're not familiar with Amazon's pricing structure, they will deliberately undercharge for a book. They will charge you less than what they paid for it wholesale. And this is called a loss leader. They are willing to take that loss because they know that you will come back to Amazon and purchase something else. Where they do make a profit on it. And typically, profit margins in the book industry are relatively slim to begin with. When we buy at wholesale, we're still paying 60 to 75% of the like retail price of a book, which is why it is so hard for independent bookstores to mark down books because that profit margin is so slim. But Amazon can do it because Amazon can make that profit up elsewhere and bookstores and booksellers can't.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that it's such an interesting thing because even people who don't regularly shop at Amazon, so for instance, like I don't buy books regularly at Amazon, but it's like it just like becomes part of like the air that we're breathing is this expectation that like things are cheap. Things are cheap, you can get things cheap and fast, and that's it. That's the standard. But like I don't, that's not actually reality, and that's not the world that we really should be creating, in my opinion. And so it's a really interesting and terrible thing to just like, I don't know, be reminded of regularly.
So that's my marketing pitch here is if you want to see a world that where or an economy that is slow and socially conscious, like just know that books are expensive and Amazon is ruining all of us. Another and I will step down from my soapbox now. But yes, books are expensive. We would raise our prices, but then nobody would join us. We try to do sales as often as we can. However, here's my next point is if you aren't interested in receiving a paperback from us, if you think that books are overpriced, we offer audiobooks. However, another issue with selecting a book of the month is not every book, especially from smaller independent presses that we want to support, they often do not have audiobooks available. Like they've just never been one recorded.
Yeah, which, you know, first of all, I want to say it's okay that books are expensive.
They should
I want to
be,
be
yeah.
clear. Yeah, like I want to be clear that our stance isn't like books are expensive. That sucks.
Fuck books.
Because that leads me to like with the audiobook thing too is like, yeah, not every if a publisher doesn't think that you're gonna sell, like if a publisher doesn't want to invest in producing an audiobook or isn't able to invest in producing an audiobook, that's a perfectly fine and legitimate thing. Like I love audiobooks. I, as an avid audiobook listener, like I want every book to have an audiobook, but I also get it when there's not. But it is something to consider, because certainly we're not going to end up with a book of the month that doesn't have an audiobook. We can end up with a swap maybe that doesn't have an audiobook, but then that's also like not great. Or not ideal. I mean, we do it. We just did it this past month. So it's fine. It's just that, like, I know, like, as an audiobook listener, I'm that person before becoming executive director. Like, I would be that person who would be like, well, that's a bummer. I want to read this book, but it's not available as an audiobook, and I don't really want to like pick one of these other ones. Like, I don't know. So it's just a lot of, there's a lot to, it's a lot that goes into it.
So
It's the
yes,
thing.
when it comes down to it, that monthly poll of 10 to 15 fiction books, 10 to 15 nonfiction books, we have put a lot of time and effort into that at that point, because it is so difficult to just narrow down to that 10 to 15, or find 10 to 15 that hits the right price point, the right availability in the United States that we can actually get in time, because that's another one is like, oh yeah, it's going into second printing. It'll be available in 60 days. It's like, we don't have 60 days. Audio access is required. Author identity, whether that be, you know, anybody that's not a cis white dude. But like, surprisingly, the majority, not surprisingly, the majority of authors are cis white dudes. So, yeah, it is a remarkably difficult task to do every single month.
Yeah, another thing that's happening here is usually we haven't read all, certainly we haven't read all of the books that have been proposed. And so we may end up picking a book that ends up being problematic in ways that we did not know. Like what happened a couple of months ago with the name of the book that I'm now forgetting.
Hagitude.
Hagitude, which I only learned about because it was, I didn't end up picking that book that month. It was one of the swaps. I picked something else, but I learned about it because it was one of the picks. I read it and I was like, oh no. I said, oh no. I don't think this was great. It's a little turfy. And it made me uncomfortable. I ended up DNFing. I wasn't gonna finish. Like, for what reason would I finish at that point? In the beginning, it was just like a little turfy, but then it like got to a point that I was like, oh no, I can't keep, I'm not gonna keep reading this book. Yeah, like we don't know that until we're reading them, and it would be impossible for all of us to read. You know, even two of us, if our only job was reading all the potential options for the theme, I don't think we would be able to do it. So there's also that to consider, but like just trying to do some sort of research about an author or a book also takes the time too. We're not going to catch everything, obviously, like in that example, but that is also part of this, right? So it's like looking for the book, looking into the author, what's the availability, what's the price, you know, does this person hate people, you know? So it's like this is all that like goes into it, and it's just interesting. And I'm glad that we're like letting people know, because I certainly didn't know until it was, I imagined that it took a lot of time, but I didn't know what that time was, and I didn't know what the steps were. And now that I've done it, I'm like, oh girl, okay.
And I think it had become so normalized to me that it was just like, all right, I gotta do this, gotta like set aside a few hours to, you know, go through the book suggestions and whatever. And it wasn't until I again downloaded that knowledge into your brain that I was like, oh yeah, this is actually hard. I do want to go back to I want to address and take full accountability for Hagitude being one of our featured swaps for what even month was
Nostalgia.
that? Nostalgia, right. It was again suggested by a member, a couple of members, I think, and voted. It received, you know, some of the most votes. We didn't select it as the featured book of the month, but it was a swap. As soon as one of our members reached out and was like, "Hey, this is pretty anti-trans," we were like, "Oh shit!" We pulled it from the shop immediately, and unfortunately, we still had like 15 copies. We ended up selling them on our outlet shop for like $5 just to get them out of here and recoup some of those costs because they couldn't be returned. That's the other thing, is a lot of times books from small retailers like us, can't return books. Big retailers like Barnes & Noble can. Some of your bigger bookstores, indie bookstores, can return books, but it varies bookseller to bookseller. And we are one of those that can't return books. So we had to recoup some of our costs somehow. And I will say, we sold it on our outlet. And every time somebody purchased it, I was like, hey, just wanted to let you know. This is priced really cheap because it's a little anti-trans. Just wanted to give you a trigger warning. So again, full responsibility. And it was no excuses, but everything has been kind of chaotic the last 6 months or so. In my life, in the feminist book club world, it's just the nature of a transition like this. So
yeah, I also just want to say, you know, you said it before, like, still recommend hardcover books. Also still recommend books that you haven't read. I also don't want the taken away to be like, oh no, I'm only gonna, you know, suggest books that I know that I've read and like, or have vetted or whatever. Like, suggest all the books.
Suggest
this is not your job.
You want to read, suggest the books right. That have a pretty cover, suggest whatever you want. Like, we will.
Yes.
We do usually do a much better job of vetting those books if we haven't read them.
Yes. So like, this is not a you thing.
This is an us thing.
This is our responsibility. You still suggest away, suggest all any and all the books written by whoever. I mean, if it was written by JKR, that's probably going to be a no right
not.
Off the bat. But anyone else, it's fine. Just throw it in there. We'll do our vetting.
Oh, Lord. So, yeah, that's the quick and dirty of just this one little component of how Feminist Book Club runs. So if you got questions for us, I mean, we put up a poll in our Instagram stories that said we were going to be recording this, ask us anything. And the only person, shout out to podcast contributor Marikita, who basically just said like, why are you so awesome? Thank you. That was the only question we got though. So if you've got questions for us, let us know. And we can do this regularly if y'all like this kind of behind the scenes. But yeah, from here on out, you will mostly just hear me on the podcast. And Sally is our head honcho. Honcha? Hefe?
I don't know.
Sure.
I'll take whatever title, I guess.
Well, thanks for doing this with me. And thanks for taking over Feminist Book Club. I know it's going to be absolutely remarkable in your hands, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
I'm very excited. Let's do this.
More details about the co-op to come. There is so much paperwork. We will get there. And we will let you know when that paperwork is submitted and all is legally in the employees' hands, which is coming very soon. All right, take care, everyone.
What would you do? Kira's entire reputation is built upon the development of ethical computing. Her AI, Ellie, is the testbed and best example of using her moral operating system. Her absolute dedication to improving kids' lives could now put all she's worked for at risk. Kira thought she and Ellie, with her ethical framework, could keep everything under control. Against conventional wisdom, it's not the AI's moral decision-making that's the problem, it's the people. This is the setup for Moral Code by Lois and Ross Melbourne, a science fiction novel that explores themes of corporate ethics, exploitation, and the intersection of innovation and morality. When Dr. Kira Stetson merges her company with billionaire Roy Brandt's secretive nanite technology, she finally has access to some much-needed funds. Kira's decision to embed her moral operating system into Brandt's nanite smart dust reflects her commitment to ethical technology development. But it turns out, there's a reason his technology has been such a closely guarded secret. Now she must confront the sinister motives of corporate raiders and the military who seek to weaponize Brandt's nanites, posing a threat to both individuals and society at large. Moral Code asks the reader to consider important and interesting questions, ones that are particularly relevant right now with the rise of AI and the ever-growing greed of capitalist interests. Plus, we want to highlight that 100% of the proceeds generated through the sales of Moral Code will be donated to help fight the child abuse and human trafficking of kids. You can learn more about Moral Code and download a free chapter at moralcodethebook.com. Thank you so much for sponsoring this episode.
Hi, my name is Ashley. My pronouns are she, her. And many people know about the beloved sitcom, The Golden Girls. But have you heard of The Golden Palace? A spinoff to The Golden Girls, The Golden Palace continues with Blanche, Rose, and Sophia having bought a hotel and are managing the hotel. In the pilot, Blanche is ready for new adventures, new journeys. Her optimism is on another level. Then Blanche, Rose, and Sophia arrive at this hotel. It's nice, but a tumbleweed might as well roll through the lobby. There are barely any guests. Don Cheadle plays Roland Wilson, the hotel's manager, and Cheech Marin plays Chuy Castillos, the hotel chef. And they bring a refreshing perspective to the show, and they gel well with the ensemble. I had never heard of this show until I saw it on Hulu. I watched the opening credits. I'm laughing through the episode. The show has the same theme song as the Golden Girls, creating a continuity. Then I finished the pilot. And I wondered why the Golden Palace isn't talked about more, especially amongst classic sitcoms of its time, and a show that is connected to the legacy of the Golden Girls. And the show ran from 1992 to 1993 for 24 episodes. The Golden Palace did not gain the audience that the Golden Girls did, thus why it ran for only one season. And that was also something that shocked me, that it didn't go for more seasons because of the connection to the Golden Girls. However, the Golden Palace maintains the same biting humor, the punchlines, the banter, the shade, the innuendos, especially pertaining to Blanche, who is a prowess. Blanche is never a joke. She's just a part of, you know, expressing who she is. There's also the tenderness of the show, where these women can make jokes about each other and play around with each other. Sophia regards Blanche and Rose as her daughters. She loves them, and that attributes to the tenderness. Bea Arthur, who played Dorothy on The Golden Girls, guest starred on The Golden Palace for one episode. And the friendships don't miss a beat. And although Bea Arthur is not on the show, on The Golden Palace, her presence is still there. Rose also has infinite stories still about St. Olaf. She could fill a daily calendar with stories about her hometown. And where many may think that she is dumb, something that I realized while watching the show is that you're just watching someone learning. And she may be a bit absent-minded, but she's someone who is exposing herself or informing herself about the world from the small town from where she grew up. And the music during the opening episode, that the part of the show after that first commercial break, makes me feel like I'm presenting at the Academy Awards. The violins, it's like I'm gliding on the stage with an envelope in hand. The measure of a great show to me is that I only watch an episode at a time, and that is to savor it. And this show is a post-workout cool-down for me, a stretch and laugh, if you will. And I love a sitcom that can have important societal conversations, and this show talked about racism, the wrongs of the Confederacy, as Blanche is from the Deep South, adoption, and sex work among the conversations that they have on this show. And I feel like a show of the 90s, sitcoms of the 90s did this well. They didn't shy away from anything, and they did it so well, and you're laughing, but you're also thinking. And I feel that that's something missing today with a lot of television and film. And I feel that The Golden Palace should be regarded with the legacy of fierce female comedy, sharp commentary, and of course, cheesecake. Previously, I've written about Designing Women, a show that ran from the mid to late 80s to the early 90s. The Golden Palace very much reminded me of Designing Women. So once you've watched The Golden Palace and its wonderful 24 episodes, you may also want to check out Designing Women. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.